Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, folks. I'm Roland Martin, live in Philadelphia, site of the Democratic National Convention. The race is on. Hillary Clinton has accepted the Democrats' nomination for president. We'll have a full breakdown of her speech. She talked about Donald Trump, his bankruptcies, criminal justice reform, the economy, immigration. We'll have it all. We'll hear from our panel. We'll hear from other experts. Folks, it's time to break the Democratic Convention down right here on News One Now on TV One, live from Philadelphia. Let's go.
Gotcha. Folks, welcome to Philadelphia. We're here at the Wells Fargo Center, Democratic National Convention 2016 is over. Delegates right now are heading to the airports, taking trains, planes, automobiles back home. But it was an exciting night here as this place was packed to the rafters to watch history made as Hillary Clinton became the first woman to lead a major party presidential ticket. During her speech, she tore apart Donald Trump, talked about her vision of foreign policy as well as domestic issues, but she kicked off her speech with a major outreach to supporters of Senator Bernie Sanders.
I want to thank Bernie Sanders. Bernie, your campaign inspired millions of Americans, particularly the young people who threw their hearts and souls into our primary. You've put economic and social justice issues front and center where they belong. And to all of your supporters here and around the country, I want you to know, I've heard you. Your cause is our cause. Don't let anyone tell you that our country is weak. We're not. Don't let anyone tell you we don't have what it takes. We do. And most of all, don't believe anyone who says, I alone can fix it. Those were actually Donald Trump's words in Cleveland. And they should set off alarm bells for all of us. Really? I alone can fix it? Americans don't say, I alone can fix it. We say, we'll fix it together. Tonight, we've reached a milestone in our nation's march toward a more perfect union. The first time that a major party has nominated a woman for president. When any barrier falls in America, it clears the way for everyone. After all, when there are no ceilings, the sky's the limit. Whatever party you belong to, or if you belong to no party at all, if you share these beliefs, this is your campaign. If you believe that companies should share profits, not pad executive bonuses, join us. If you believe the minimum wage should be a living wage and no one working full time should have to raise their children in poverty, join us. If you believe that every man, woman, and child in America has the right to affordable health care, join us. If you believe that we should say no to unfair trade deals, that we should stand up to China, that we should support our steel workers and auto workers and homegrown manufacturers, then join us. We should expand Social Security and protect a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. believe that your working mother, wife, sister, or daughter deserves equal pay, join us. Just ask yourself, do you really think Donald Trump has the temperament to be commander-in-chief? Donald Trump can't even handle the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign. He loses his cool at the slightest provocation. When he's gotten a tough question from a reporter, when he's challenged in a debate, when he sees a protester at a rally, imagine him in the Oval Office facing a real crisis. A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons. And if we're serious about keeping our country safe, we also can't afford to have a president who's in the pocket of the gun lobby. I'm not here to repeal the Second Amendment. I'm not here to take away your guns. I just don't want you to be shot by someone who shouldn't have a gun in the first place. We have to heal the divides in our country, not just on guns, but on race, immigration, and more. So let's put ourselves in the shoes of young Black and Latino men and women who face the effects of systemic racism and are made to feel like their lives are disposable. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of police officers kissing their kids and spouses goodbye every day, heading off to do a dangerous and necessary job. We will reform our criminal justice system from end to end and rebuild trust between law enforcement and the communities they serve.
After the speech, we caught up with a number of politicians as well as celebrities who gave their perspective on the speech of Hillary Clinton.
I thought she did everything she needed to do. She set out a real stark difference between her and a man who I think is temperamentally unqualified to be president of the United States. She told the country what it is she wants to do. She took some pretty bold positions on domestic policy, guns, and how she wants to conduct foreign policy. I think she simply made the case why she ought to be the next president of the United States. I'm real happy to be one of her supporters.
It was a phenomenal speech. It just reminded us that it's time for us to come together as a party. And we will. And the comparison of Donald Trump, there is no comparison. But we still got a lot of work to do. And I just like the idea that she laid out what she wants to do, as opposed to Donald Trump just giving us a lot of sound bites.
It's incredible tonight. She laid out policy. She talked about principles. She talked about how stronger we are together. She wrapped her arms around the revolution to say together, we can make a difference for our children, our families, and how dangerous Trump is. And I think people heard her.
This is a historic moment in the history of our nation. Certainly the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party has ever nominated a woman for president of the United States. This is a great night, but now the work begins. That's the message that I'm delivering to my friends all over the country. Now the work begins. If we continue to celebrate this night but not go to work, we will not have a good outcome.
It's absolutely exhilarating. I'm very proud of her, for her. And this is a great moment in history. Not only a woman, but she's going to do something. That's, you know, politicians get out there and they do a lot of talk. She's going to do something. And we're going to be with her as she does it.
Well, I think she was right on point in terms of what this country needed and the direction that we need to go to pull people together. And, you know, the rhetoric from the other side is just rhetoric. What we need is someone who will lead this country to a higher height and greater heights than we have in the past.
Hip-hop is a part of just general culture, so it's very important to get the youth, get all people. You got four generations of it now. I think that people just got to get out here and make sure Trump doesn't get elected. And I really sincerely believe Hillary is going to try to do her best. She's got a lot of things to do, starting with that crime bill, and I think hip-hop can play a major role in dealing with that crime bill.
It was incredible. It was on point. She targeted policies, which is very important. She talked about children, the idea of Black Lives Do Matter, is very important. The idea of nonviolence, you know, the idea of police life matter too. You know, you can't blame an entire police force for something that's happening. We have to make sure that we enforce the right judges, and the idea of institution was very important. So she was, everything tonight was on point. I saw a very focused point.
I really appreciated how, I mean, unlike the RNC, she provided solutions to what we've been talking about throughout the debates, and it wasn't just one long complaining session of how far America has to go.
All right, then. And so what are you going to do to get folks to go to vote in this election?
I don't know. I mean, I was here today. I interviewed John Lewis today, and I'm planning to be as active as I can and just helping my peers go vote. I personally cannot vote yet, but I know friends that can.
The one thing that I recognize about her is that she spoke from her heart. She spoke. She was so in control of everything she wanted us to know about what she plans to do when she is president of the United States. And that was so assuring to me.
I'm very, very proud that we launched a history of the first woman nominee. It's a really exciting thing. And her speech tonight was presidential. I mean, she took that stage and she showed people she had to master the details. She had a vision for inclusion and she had a heart for this country, motivated and fueled with the heart of a mother who wants the best for not just her children and her grandchildren, but all of America's children.
Great speech. She included us all. When she become president, and she will become the next president of the United States, she will lead us to higher ground. She will bring us all together, because in the final analysis, she recognized that we're one people, we're one family, that we all live in the same house, the American house and the world house. This was a historic night.
We also chatted with delegates and other attendees who were here in the hall to get their perspective on Hillary Clinton accepting the Democratic nomination.
I thought it was a very exciting speech. I thought it was very elaborate speech. I thought it was very direct. And so a lot of the great things that I've known about Hillary Clinton for a long time, I supported her back in 2007 when she ran for president the first time. So to be here tonight has just been awesome and exhilarating, exciting. And so I'm very proud of her speech. I think she did a solid job.
Our convention definitely highlighted all of the diversities that make up our society. So race, gender, gender identity, faith, ethnicity, creed, hair texture, shapes, sizes, body mass index, I mean, everything.
And now we should have everybody on board, from Bernie Sanders on down, on all the way down to the Republicans. We should have everybody on board and ready to rock and roll come Tuesday, November the 8th. And when all the returns come in, overwhelmingly, unanimously, by 100% landslide, Hillary Clinton will be our new president of the United States of America.
Folks, prior to Hillary Clinton's speech, there were a number of speeches, but one that got this crowd on their feet was by Reverend William Barber, head of the North Carolina NAACP. He was here speaking as a citizen. Here's what he had to say.
I say to you tonight that some issues are not left versus right or liberal versus conservative. They are right versus wrong. We need to embrace our deepest moral values and push for a revival of the heart of our democracy. Let me be clear that she nor any person can do it alone. The watchword of this democracy and the watchword of faith is we. The heart of our democracy is on the line this November and beyond. Now, my friends, they tell me that when the heart is in danger, somebody has to call an emergency code. And somebody with a good heart will bring a defibrillator to work on a bad heart. Because it's possible to shock a bad heart. and revive the pulse. In this season, when some want to harden and stop the heart of our democracy, we are being called, like our foremothers and fathers, to be the moral defibrillators of our time. We must shock this nation with the power of love. We must shock this nation with the power of mercy. We must shock this nation and fight for justice for all. We can't give up on the heart of our democracy. Not now, not ever.
Ask my alpha brother. When we come back, our panel weighs in on what Hillary Clinton had to say and what needs to be done now as we are a little more than 100 days away from Election Day. News One Now, reporting live from Philadelphia, site of the Democratic National Convention. Back in a moment on TV One.
It was amazing to see everyone just united in just loving him, because everyone was screaming, you know, four more years. And even when Hillary came out, how happy everybody was. Even the Bernie supporters. It was beautiful.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. pointed us to the mountaintop. And although we are not there yet, we are still climbing. And with President Hillary Clinton, America will rise even further.
All right, folks, we're at the Wells Fargo Center. Hillary Clinton just finished giving her speech to the Democratic delegates. Packed house here. We're joined by Jason Johnson, political editor of TheRoot.com, Dr. Julian Malvo, president emerita, been in college, also an economist, Paris Chenard, Republican strategist. Folks, didn't take Hillary Clinton long to go after Donald Trump. Your immediate assessment of her speech?
Much better than I thought. I don't think Hillary Clinton's a very good speaker, but she somehow channeled some real passion, some real punch tonight. It was interesting. It was the first time I heard her make a case for voting for her instead of just against Donald Trump.
I agree, except for I think there was too much Trump in the speech. I do agree that she made a better case for herself. She talked about some, but not all, of the economic issues. She did talk about work. I love that she raised a point about profit sharing. We can change the tax code to make sure those businesses that have a great business ethos get rewarded. But there was too much Trump, and she repeated herself. She looked presidential. She looked fantastic, and it was a great moment for her. But she should have had somebody else introduce her besides her daughter.
No.
I think
but here's the deal, though. First of all, I didn't think it was too much Trump, because I thought what she hit on was strong. When she ticked off ties in China, frames here, when she talked about student debt, his debt, yeah. Paris, you had to cringe when she hit those points.
I was cringing because I know that something's coming from the Donald Trump campaign at her, because those things get under his skin. And she was really pointedly telling the American people some truths about his record. And that's what campaigns are about. They're about exposing the truth and going after the facts of each person's record. I do believe that she should have spent a little bit more time talking about her own record and her own capabilities and her own reasons why she should be president, rather than, like you said, voting against Trump, but voting for her, getting
yeah,
her.
Yeah, but here's the deal, though, Jason. She did. I mean, first of all, look, she talked about the economy, talked about criminal justice, talked about immigration reform, talked about what issue when it comes to choice. Right. So there were a number of things that she laid out that really is a part of her agenda, but she also has to make the contrast against Donald Trump.
Right.
That's true. She
I
has to make
the contrast.
I think
she was a little repetitive, Roland, in terms of her talk about Trump. She made the tie point and the cuffling point more than once. And I just, but I like the speech. As you said, it exceeded my expectations. And I thought she looked fantastic.
Jason, the reason that matters is because Donald Trump was running around in Ohio, Pennsylvania, talking about bringing manufacturing jobs. What she's saying is, dude, you didn't bring the jobs here.
Right, exactly. Your hats are made in China. Your suits are made in Indonesia. Your farm workers all come from overseas, and none of them are American citizens. I thought that was a good point. Look, we've had a lot of people this week who talk about how great Hillary Clinton is, but we needed to hear hear from her, the candidate, not this dismissive Donald Trump is a dumb guy, but she needed to make the case. Look, y'all, when it all comes down to it, this is what I did. This is why you should vote for me. This is why you shouldn't vote for the other guy. I was impressed. Yeah, I tweeted this. If this is the Hillary Clinton we see during the debate, she's going to win off real.
Oh, now yeah, but that, she's going to do that anyway, yeah, because I think her temperament is so different from Donald Trump's. And I think the point she made that was really important was when she talked about these temper tantrums he has. And do you want somebody like that who, as you say, something gets under his skin and he just erupts?
Anybody who can be taunted by a tweet. Well, can't
be
president.
I thought what was also important is that she made the case for Bernie Sanders supporters. She went out and said, Bernie, thank you for running. You made me better.
I'm so happy that
she needed to do that because she has to have those progressives coming onto her side and talking about the issues that Bernie Sanders ran the election on. So that's an important thing for her that she had to do.
And that was early on. It was early on, and she also was pointed in saying, you believe in these issues, and when is the last time you actually heard a nominee talk about what's in the platform?
Exactly.
Where she said, we fought for it together, now let's work together to make it happen. That was a strong point.
I was with the Utah delegation, which was mostly, don't ask, which was mostly Bernie people. Of their 24-person delegation, or whatever, only six of them were Hillary. They have you all noticed those neon green shirts had on. When I looked over, I counted, maybe it's about 10% of the delegates had it. It was a last minute movement on their part. But they were not backing down. One lady had taped a silence thing on her mouth. Some of them turned their back. And I was talking to them. They let me sit in their delegate seat. They were very nice to me, but they really feel that they still haven't been recognized. Whenever she mentioned Bernie stuff and I said something to them, they feel like they want more. I don't know what they want.
First of all, I'm sorry. At some point, and look, Ben Jealous, I talked to him, went off on a lot of these Bernie delegates.
Exactly.
And he was a huge Bernie Sanders supporter. He said, but the bottom line is here. We got a whole lot. They got a lot in the platform.
Exactly.
I mean, the recognition he got, I think the Hillary Clinton folks have been extremely gracious to Bernie Sanders people. And at the end of the day, they lost.
Right.
Period.
Yeah, they lost.
And at the end of the day, you lost. And you lost for the very reason that your candidate just demonstrated, by which is he has now decided, oh, yeah, I'm not a Democrat anymore either. And he made that announcement this week. And that's why they didn't want to win the nomination to begin with.
That's why he did not have the nerve of him at some level to say the rules are not fair. Well, you don't know the rules, dude.
Because you ain't really a part of the party.
You've been a five-minute Democrat. But my concern is that I feel very assuaged by the time I spent with them, because while many of them are going to vote Hillary, they just mad.
Yeah, but here's the deal, though. It's a bunch of people mad on the Republican side as well. I do believe that Paris, now leaving here, Hillary Clinton, Tim Kaine, going on this bus trip, going through the Rust Belt, reminiscent Bill Clinton, Al Gore in 1992. Trump has been, look, a lot of those disaffected white voters upset by what's happening with trade. But he's going to have to now talk about a plan. Bumper sticker ain't going to work.
Right.
No, it's very true. And that's what we're waiting on. And we're trying to work with the campaign to have more of a specific agenda for not only the black community, but for the people that are going to be open to voting for him and are looking for policy from the Trump campaign. But one thing that I saw that was missing was Hillary Clinton tonight talking about HBCUs. She has a large plan about it. I was hoping to hear a little bit more of that and heard a lot more about the black community. I believe Donald Trump mentioned African Americans at least four or five times. It wasn't as many in this speech, but I was hoping that she would talk a little bit more. I was standing next to DeRayas.
It wasn't four or five times.
Right.
No, it was four or five times, actually.
No, he mentioned Chicago, Baltimore. He mentioned inner cities.
And he said African Americans at least three times. And then
okay,
referenced,
so now you've gone from four or five to three.
It was the four or five black people that he knows.
Here's the deal, though. One of the things, though, beyond her speech tonight, and that is, and you saw it in there, first and foremost, to have the wives of law enforcement speak. Now, here's what's interesting. Republicans did the same thing, but they didn't have mothers of the movement.
Exactly.
Democrats seem to be more embracing of blue lives and black lives than GOP was.
Well, look, if you did not speak at this Democrat convention, you clearly are not on the list, because they had everybody who was somebody speaking at this convention. So the powerful thing that I came away from was, she has some mighty surrogates that can go out and touch all the communities. When she can't speak to something because she might not have the credibility or authenticity to do it, she has people that can go and reinforce for her, and that's going to be very powerful. And on our side, we're going to have to find other people to do the same thing for Donald Trump.
It was amazing. I saw after last night's speeches, the Trump campaign sent out a press release, said Democrats' whole agenda was a fear.
I said, surely somebody was drunk who wrote that press release.
No, he was being self-reflective. He looked in the mirror and saw his own convention. This has been a convention of optimism. It's been an upbeat.
It's been very divisive, too. I mean, the Bernie
divisive
Sanders...
I disagree with you because, as I said, I spent 4 hours today with Bernie people. Sitting in the Utah Dell, maybe it was three. I'm going to be like you. My mathematics is slipping. But anyway...
Fuzzy math.
And economist. Right. Go ahead.
No, I was there from 8 until I came down here. So, but in any case, it's divisive the same way that when we left in 1988, Atlanta, Reverend Jackson did not win. And one of the things, footnote, is both these sisters who are running it, Mignon, Donna Brazile,
Leah Daltrey.
We are Jackson protege. We were the people who were part of it. And when we left Atlanta, when we left San Francisco, we was mad that Reverend Jackson had not done as well as we thought. But so we left mad, just like the Hillary people left in 2008 But people, you get mad, you get a few minutes, and then you get back together and
Jason,
you clean up.
Jason, we're around 100 days before the election.
Right.
How do you, what now has to happen? Clinton, Kaine, what must they do?
First thing Clinton, Kaine have to do is make sure that their money is in the right place. The biggest advantage that they have over Donald Trump right now, it's not in the polls, it's not even in the surrogates, it's in the money they have spent on the ground with staff. And they have the staff out there, they need to keep those people motivated, go through those seats. That's the thing that's going to end up winning this race for them.
Even more than that, they've got to spend money on black media buys and other media buys. I mean, when we look at these campaigns, all too often, even though we've got black folks in there, I want to see our black newspapers. I want to see black radio, TV, Radio 1 involved. You know, they're going to be taking out ads elsewhere. So people have to make sure that their resources are reflective of those who they value. Don't tell me that black people read or listen to whatever radio. Target for us. So that's the end. They have to begin almost immediately a church movement and a college movement.
What must Trump and Pence do?
They must begin to define Hillary Clinton as the candidate that is not for a certain amount of demographic groups. They have to define her the way they are successfully defining Donald Trump as a racist, as a bigot. They have to define her the way they're defining him, the way he defined everybody else in that campaign. And the other thing that the Trump campaign has to do is spend the money in the black community as well.
Well, good luck with that.
They got to get some staff. They literally got to get some staff.
That's
always been
the
issue.
I'll say this here.
The most important thing the Trump campaign has to do is get a damn plan. Because the bottom line is this here. He's been winging it, doing bumper sticker slogans. Now it's only two people standing. And guess what? They're going to go after him at every turn. He is going to have to actually have a plan on the economy, on jobs, on energy, on veterans, and not just this sort of general, hey, I'm going to just make it happen.
One thing I'm going to be looking at, Roland, is to see if the unfavorables for Hillary Clinton go down and if she gets a bump after this convention.
Right.
Because despite all of the things that have been going on, unfavorability amongst both candidates are still pretty close and pretty high. So it'll be interesting to see what happens after this convention.
All right, folks. Well, look, we certainly appreciate it. Again, a little more than 100 days before Election Day. We will continue breaking this whole thing down. We're going to go to a break right now. We'll be back. News 1 Now, TV 1 Live from Philadelphia, site of the Democratic National Convention. Back in a moment.
It was a dope speech. I mean, President Obama showed us why he's President Obama. I mean, it was a magnificent speech. It hit what it had to hit and did what it had to do.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Fat pigs, dogs, disgusting. That is what Donald Trump thinks of women. That's what he sees in our daughters and our mothers and our sisters and our grandmothers of this country.
Folks, supporters of Senator Bernie Sanders certainly had a lot of outreach last night from the Hillary Clinton campaign. They were not satisfied. Remember, there was drama early in the week. They sort of smoothed over all of that. We caught up with Ben Jealous, former CEO of the NAACP, a big-time supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders. And he had this to say about Green Party candidate Jill Stein wanting to saying that Bernie Sanders, frankly, has disappointed and turned his back on his supporters by endorsing Hillary Clinton.
Look, Jill Stein never was a Bernie supporter. She was always campaigning for, she always had her own campaign. She has some strategic objectives. If she can get 5% of the vote, she can get a whole lot of money for her party. She can get 15% of a poll, she can get on stage. But you know what? She'll never get 51% to be able to win. And the reality is that there are some progressives out there, small number, who really feel like they can afford Trump being in the White House. You and I know our folks can't. That's just simple fact. Bernie knows that too. He knows that poor folks up in Vermont or in Brooklyn can't afford it either, and that's who he's always fought for. So those of us who are very pragmatic and understand we have to deliver real victories for real families and real people, they're the only way to have a president that we can even influence is to get Hillary Clinton in. The other thing I would say is this. People suggest, well, you shouldn't trust this politician to make change or that politician to make change. You shouldn't trust any politician to make change. The reality is that we're movement people. And as movement people, you put your faith in your movement to hold politicians accountable. And if they make themselves obstacles, then get them out of the way.
When this convention is over, what is the one thing that you would tell Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine they need to do to secure the black vote, but more importantly, to secure any vote?
Invest in organizing. Don't worry about folks who are on the fence in this. You know, they'll make a decision. Frankly, the free media, you know, will help inform them. Worry about the folks who are with you but may not turn out. Trump will get massive turnout because there's these cicada kind of voters. They vote like every 20 years, or they're double cicadas every 40 years, only when there's a celebrity conservative. Think Jesse the Body Ventura. We tend to ridicule those folks. They love them. They turn out. Or there's a reactionary extremist. Think David Duke or Barry Goldwater. Again, they love him. They turn out. He's both of those. And so we need to understand polls don't pick those folks up. Models don't include them. We should just anticipate he'll get 10% more voters than we think is possible, which means they have to invest heavy and hard in the base black and brown voters. And yes, take money out of advertising and invest it in turnout.
Up next, we talk education with XQ America CEO Ruslan Ali about how to rethink high school right here on TV One. News One Now from Philadelphia.
So that we could showcase the...
It's exactly what the president had to do, sort of talking to all the Americans, why we need to come together. And that's in a juxtaposition to what we saw last week. Last week we saw a convention that was based around fear, based around anger, based on this 8-mile highway of division. And this is the opposite.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Stand up if you're ready to keep our communities and our cops safe and end the structural racism that keeps sending our kids to prison instead of sending them to college. Stand up for Black Lives Matter.
Education is a big issue that we focus on here at News One Now. It's one of the reasons why our networking company has a partnership with the University of Phoenix here at the Democratic Convention. We talked about this initiative called Rethink High School with XQ America. That's an organization out of Palo Alto, California that I'm also consulting on about how do we rethink high school. I had a great conversation with CEO Ruslan Ali about the initiative.
We made this bus so that we could collect student voices and community testimonials all around the country so that we could showcase the work of the 10,000 applicants that are building plans to transform high schools, and then so we can celebrate them and their communities and towns everywhere in the country.
We have over 59 different occupations represented in this movement. Architects, engineers, family members everywhere that are building, coming together, right? We're seeing self-assembly, and we know we are best as a country when we come together to solve big problems. We are seeing that in this movement. This bus is our way of celebrating and showcasing it.
All right, so, and again, so we got the videos here. And so what's the room here?
Here is where to have a soundproof room to record your voice. There are lots of options on issues for you to speak about. You can learn facts and speak truth to your power.
So we were talking about this idea of Rethink High School. Where did all of this really just start? I mean, how did this really originate that this is the theme to work on?
Well, look, we know that high schools for a long time have been left unchanged in this country. In fact, we've gone from a Model T to a Tesla, Roland. We've gone from a switchboard to a smartphone, and our high schools look exactly the same today as they did 100 years ago. They worked 100 years ago. They were preparing a new generation of young people for factory lives in the industrial economy. That has changed, but our high schools have stayed frozen in time. We also know you know more than most. We've been fighting for a long time in education reform and in the education conversation generally. We got a lot of politicians all the time that speak about how we're going to transform our schools, but we never build the civic and political will to do it. We knew that the answers for what schools would need to look like in the new economy would come from communities. So we empowered them. We launched this competition and provided them tools and resources to come together, redesign whole new institutions that will serve their young people better.
And so how many folks applied?
Well, we have nearly 10,000 applicants. We had 700 full-on applications. It was a year-long process of rigorous professional development and teamwork to apply, and we'll be making the announcements for the winners in just a few weeks.
So what do they win?
$10 million as a start. But money alone is not enough.
Now, is it total $10 million? First of all, how many winners? How many winners will they be that you'll pick from?
Well, when we started this, we said 5. That was before we received 700 such amazing ideas from 10,000 people in the country. So there will be more than 5, we are comfortable saying.
So each one of those winners will receive $10 million each to build this new 21st century high school?
Yes. But money alone is not going to do it, right? We're going to provide supports. We're going to provide teamwork, capacity buildings. We're going to meet these teams where they are and provide them and their teachers and their young people and their communities the supports they need to succeed and be empowered to do this for themselves.
Now, I see the map here. So is this map here all the places that you've gone?
Actually, no. This represents where we have teams. This is all over America. Teams are coming together to tackle this problem from Hawaii and Alaska, from east, west, north, south. You know, Roland, as you know, I've been doing civil rights for a long time. And this is the first time that race and poverty, while at the heart of this work, as usual, we are going to close the achievement gap together. This is the first time I'm seeing this movement across the aisle from people of every hue coming together to rethink what's best for their communities. It's just beautiful.
You also been pushing the hashtag and having folks also comment and getting their thoughts as well.
Yes, yes. This has to be a movement. Look, high schools in this country have only been transformed twice, after the War of 1812 and leading into the Industrial Revolution, and then they just stuck. Both times it was a movement by the people for the people because we knew we needed to know more and be able to do more to have successful lives. And we knew it was the role of public institutions to provide us what we needed. We, the people, have to make this movement to rethink high schools.
Have you been surprised by what a lot of these high school students have been saying, or even people who've graduated, about their experience and what they liked, didn't like?
I think I'm more surprised by I'm more humbled to know how powerful their stories are, right? That they're willing to share with us and say, like, this is exactly how my high school experience was, and now I'm willing to rethink it with community members. That is not just students, it's students, parents, educators, and teachers, right? That we're coming together and actually making this happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great to hear from students. I've always said that everyone deserves a seat at the table, and unfortunately at the moment, students just don't have one. And so as the primary consumers of education, it's essential that we listen to students. And I always thought, you know, I always fought in high school to have a voice or a seat at the table when we were making important decisions, or to let other students speak up as well. And so I think that's what's really powerful.
Did y'all know there was a black woman who was the CEO of this convention? Well, guess what? We'll talk to her up next right here, News One Now on TV One.
Speaks to what's best about America, contrary to what we were hearing last week. So Obama speaks to the positive America. America is a nation of about being hopeful. and bring together. So, and I think he touched on that, and guess the way that Obama does.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Is a result of fear. Those who think Americans scare easily enough to abandon our country's ideals in exchange for a false sense of security underestimate our resolve. To them, we say only this: not here, not ever.
Welcome back to Philadelphia, the Democratic National Convention. Putting on a national convention is a huge undertaking. For the second time in 8 years, Leah Daughtry served as CEO of the Democratic National Convention. We caught up with her this week to give us a sense of what her job is all about.
I am responsible for the execution and planning of all aspects of the party's convention. So that's the logistics, the program, everything.
So you're the person everybody blames.
That's it.
And then you're the person no one thanks.
That's right. All of the blame, none of the credit.
Certainly, it started off not as you expected, having to deal with a DNC chair and all that drama.
Yes.
That certainly was a little kink in the rope.
Yes. Well, there's always a kink. So, you know, you have the things that you plan for, then there's always something unexpected. So the chair's decision to resign was the unexpected this time. But you deal with it. You roll with the punches. If you've done your planning, the kinks don't fluster you.
First of all, convention is a monumental affair. And there are a lot of people who are vendors, people who are contractors. You've also ensured that you have minority participation.
Absolutely. It's important to us that it's not about diversity, it's about representation. That the people who make our party strong are part of the fabric of everything we do, from behind the scenes to in front of the camera. And so we've invested the time and energy to make that. So we made a commitment to do 35% of minority participation in our spending. We've actually exceeded that. We're at 45%. Our staff is 60% female and 60% diverse. So we're really proud of what we've accomplished here in Philadelphia.
Now, of course, everybody, a lot of the delegates, other folks right here, they're here for the fun, some folks for the parties. It's all work for you. But I got to ask this here. A lot of speakers this week, but is there one person who you said, all right, I know y'all sweating me, but I'm going to be sitting in that chair because I want to hear this person. I want to be here for this moment.
You know, there are so many exciting
things. You got to pick one.
I don't know. I think what I'm looking forward to is the mothers of the movement who are speaking tonight about their experiences with their sons, their husbands, their fathers. And this is the first time at a national convention that you've had those sort of personal stories dealing with one of the major issues of our time, criminal justice and social justice issues.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So conservative Ron Christie sent out a tweet, and I ripped him, and he said that he was offended by the politicking with the moms. And I said, but did you say that about the moms of Benghazi? I get to get a response. And I think it's important people understand that these mothers are real people too.
Yes, they are. They are. And I know some of them. They've lost their children, their husbands, their sons, and they have a right as Americans to press for the kind of reforms that will ensure that no other daughter, mother, sister has to endure the kind of pain that they have to endure. That's what we do as Americans. We champion the issues that are of concern to us. So I say have at it. I'm proud of them, and I'm glad that we're going to have them here to talk about their issues this evening.
Up next, Congresswoman Joyce Bailey goes gangster wearing the same dress Melania Trump wore last week, and we'll hear from some black men representing colored troops from the Civil War. Next on News One Now TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
So, folks, of course, Melania Trump last week wore this very expensive white outfit. And last night, Congresswoman Joyce Bailey of Ohio, she just got gangster. She wore the same outfit. Y'all, check this out. This is her walking on the stage waving. Now, Melania didn't wear it like that. And so people were talking about it all on social media. Pull a photo up. You'll see Joyce Bailey on the left wearing, do y'all have the photo?
Pull a photo up if y'all can. Pull a photo up. So that's Joyce Beatty on the left, Melania Trump on the right. She wore the exact same outfit last night. I texted this morning. I said, okay, you know you're wrong for that. But people are cracking up, and everybody's saying that Joyce Beatty got more hips and more swagger. She wore it better than Melania Trump. So that was pretty cool there. Also, folks, yesterday, the color guards were presented by the 3rd Regiment of the United States Colored Troops Reenactors. There were some 11,000 black soldiers who served in the Civil War. This was the largest group. They were out of Philadelphia. They presented the colors last night, and so we had an opportunity to catch up with them. They shared their history. They talked about how important it is to recognize these soldiers, these colored soldiers, for the role they played in the Civil War. Some 200,000 African Americans, of course, served in the Civil War. And so when we talked with them about the history, they also love to sing, so they're going to take us out. We want to thank all of you for watching our coverage right here in News One Now, for Cleveland last week, Philadelphia this week. Hear these soldiers. Thanks a lot. News One Now, TV One.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.